100% born in the Appalachian Mountains and made in the USA, Timber Ninja Outdoors provides a range of mobile hunting options to accommodate diverse hunting preferences. Whether you prioritize comfort, lightweight design, or versatility, their two-panel and single-panel saddles collection has something for everyone. The Black Belt Nano is the lightest single-panel saddle available on the market, weighing in under a pound. The saddle is designed with the minimalist hunter in mind, focusing on lightweight functionality and breathability. One notable feature is the patent-pending magnetic stick clip system on the side, which allows for convenient transportation of sticks up the tree, as well as a built-in platform holder. The Nano saddle can be folded up to the size of a Nalgene bottle, enabling easy portability. With a four-way stretch material on the back for a comfortable fit, as well as strategically placed padding for hip pinch relief, you can use code EASTMEETSWEST to get free shipping on any Timber Ninja order. If you try it out and don't like it, send it back within 30 days for a full refund. Learn more at TimberNinjaOutdoors.com and sign up for their email newsletter for exclusive discounts and product drops. When it comes to optics, I get the same question over and over again. What are the best all-around binoculars? Well, it's tough to find something that works in every condition great, but after using a pair of Maven B1.2 10x42s, I think I found them. They feature an 8x or a 10x option, superior low light performance, tack sharp edge-to-edge clarity, a generous depth of field, and a silky focus mechanism. All of Maven Optics have a lifetime no-fault warranty and hail from the great state of Wyoming. I've been using Maven Optics since I bought my first pair in 2017, and I think you should test them out for yourself. Head over to mavenbelt.com and use the code EASTMEETSWEST-GIFT for a free gift with any full-price optics order. For all of those that want a truck bed cover for work or play, Diamondback makes the top-of-the-line, heavy-duty covers that help you do more with your truck. They're perfect for the truck-owning, avid sportsmen, outdoor enthusiasts, and weekend project warriors. I'm currently using the HD cover that is capable of holding up to 1,600 pounds on the top. And then I have the Yakima Overhaul HD bars on top so I can put my rooftop tent on it. When I'm not using my rooftop tent and able to use the trifold design of the Diamondback, I have the Crossbin 8 in there to organize all of my stuff in the back of my truck bed. Diamondback is made right here in Phillipsburg, Pennsylvania. If you want to check them out, head over to diamondbackcovers.com. If you've wanted that hunting camp tradition that we talk about, that experience, but you don't have a hunting camp of your own, you're welcome to come stay at my hunting camp up here in the Pennsylvania Wilds called the Elk Crossing Getaway in the PA Wilds. So if you go over to Airbnb, you can check out our three-bedroom, one-and-a-half-bath house that's right in the heart of Pennsylvania elk country. It's only minutes away from a bunch of public land to be able to hunt, hiking trails, outdoor recreation, fishing, all of those things there. The house is completely fully stocked with everything that you need to be able to spend a week hunting deer, taking your family up to see the elk, anything like that. So if you head over to Airbnb and search Elk Crossing Getaway in the PA Wilds, you'll find my listing there and you can rent out my house. Send us a message, an inquiry that you're interested in it and mention that you heard it on the podcast here, then we'll get you 10% off of your first stay.
Are you an adventurer looking to take your hunt to the next level? Then you're in the right place. Welcome to East Meets West Hunt with your host, Bo Martonic.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the East Meets West Hunt podcast presented by Spartan Forge. On today's episode, I am joined by a buddy of mine, Thomas Clements. He's a freelance photographer, videographer, and producer. He has spent time filming Seek One, Lee and Tiffany at the Crush, and other projects over the last few years. So we discuss Thomas's job as a freelance creative, what that means, and some of my experience and background in what I consider creative with my wood carving days and making gun cabinets, and then also some advice for those that are wanting to become a hunting photographer and filmmaker. And then our conversation transitions to a different front that I think is extremely important about how hunting media affects our world, self-regulation, consumption, and much more. This is a really important conversation that is not as sexy to talk about as deer hunting tactics and topics, but I think it's really important, no matter who you are that's listening to this, that takes in media, which you are as you are listening to this podcast. So on this week's Mountain Buck Monday Story of the Week, we have a story coming from Kyle Bensing out of Pennsylvania. And this is a really well-written story. I really enjoyed reading it from Kyle about a hunt with his son, and even a little bit more of the story here. But I'll get into it. As Kyle wrote in, this story pretty much goes back to November of 2020. After coming home from my annual rut hunt at our cabin in Pennsylvania, I was very discouraged. I'd spent almost an entire week hunting what I felt like should have been some of the best days for rutting action on our property, and had seen less than a handful of deer. When I started to think about it more after a few weeks, I came to realize that the only reason likely for all the pressure our land had seen for a few weeks. See, I am only one member of an 18-member deer camp. In the weeks leading up to my trip, our other cabin members had been going up almost every weekend, and there were four-wheelers being ridden around our property almost every weekend as well. It was at that moment I decided I was not going to let things like that control the outcome of my hunt again. My father and I had talked about getting into saddle hunting for a few years, which ultimately sent me over the edge on an adventure I'd never seen before. By January 2021, I'd begun e-scouting public land within an hour of our cabin. In a few weeks, I had multiple spots and remote locations picked out that I wanted to get boots on the ground in and start hanging cameras. February 14th, which my wife wasn't very happy about, rolls around. One of my best friends, my cousin, and myself in 16 inches of snow stepped foot for the first time on a piece of public. By the end of the day, we had covered 8 miles in the snow up to our knees and hung about 5 cameras. Every year since then, we make 2 to 3 trips up in the off season to change batteries in the cameras, swap cards and non-cellular cameras, move camera sets that are not being active what we want to see, and hang additional cameras. When we made this jump, I told my cousin I believed it would take us 5 years to truly learn the deer in this area, and that if we killed a buck in there before that, it would likely be sheer luck. Well, this year, luck ended up being on my son's side. Every year, we go up for the last 4 days of rifle season to make drives with other members of our camp, friends, and family of the members, and this year was much of the same, although we were doing it on this new piece of land. My son, a buddy, and I were walking in on a different trail than everyone else to set up for the first drive we had ever made in this area. It was a trail I had walked in and out many times, either for camera checks or to archery hunt the ridge top we would be lining up on. This time, though, things looked and felt different. There was snow on the ground again, something I hadn't experienced since my first trip there. Snow was falling from the sky, and my son was able to be by my side for the first time ever in this area. I often bump deer while walking back this trail, but I'm never able to get shooting with a bow in my hand. We moved slowly with the wind in our face, and I was constantly scanning around, knowing that any deer out ahead would not be able to smell us and would be easy to spot in the fresh snow. As we rounded a bend in the trail, I looked up ahead at the hillside across from us, and there he was. I got down quickly and had my son get beside me when I put the crosshairs on the deer. I could immediately tell it was a great buck for my 13-year-old to take as his first buck. I told him, "Caden, it's a good buck. Are you ready?" I heard the safety click off as he said yes. I counted 3, 2, and before I even finished one, I heard the crack from his gun. I looked over at my son and said, "Caden, you got him. He just fell over." The excitement, joy, happiness, and pride that the three of us shared in the woods at that moment is something that I will never forget. Man, that's an awesome story, Kyle. And like I said, very well written, and a really great buck for your son's first buck. And so anybody wants to check that out at East Meets West Hunt on Instagram or East Meets West Outdoors on Facebook, you can see the pictures of this deer with Kyle and his son, Caden. Really cool. I appreciate you sharing. And if anybody else wants to share their mountain buck story to be featured on Mountain Buck Monday, just send it to my email, bo@eastmeetswesthunt.com. Just a short paragraph or two and some nice clean photos of you and the deer and whatever else helps tell that story. Would love to be able to share it with the audience. In other news, this weekend. Yeah, I believe it'll be this weekend that's coming up here. I will be at the Great American Outdoor Show. Let me see what those dates are. The 3rd and 4th of February. So I'll be at the Great American Outdoor Show with Maven Optics, and I'll be working the booth there. I've worked that booth for the last like 7 or 8 years. And so excited to be there. And if you want to stop by and check out some of their binoculars, their spotting scope, their rifle scopes, range finders, all of that stuff in person, and want to check it out and talk with me there, feel free to stop by. And I believe they'll be in the same booth, which is in the gun hall in the Great American Outdoor Show. So right by the main entrance there. Come find us and come chat. That'll be really cool to get to talk to everybody again this year. And then on that Monday, which would be the 5th of February, I will be hanging out over at the Spartan Forge booth and kind of bouncing around the show a little bit. My brother will be running the Spartan Forge booth. I'll be helping him out there a little bit on the 5th. And so, yeah, if you're in Harrisburg at the Great American Outdoor Show, would love to be able to meet you and get the chat. And lastly, the Mountain Buck Scouting Camp 2024, which is being held March 23rd and 24th. I am recording this out a little ways, but there are a few general admission spots left. So if you've been thinking about going to check out the event, then head over to eastmeetswesthunt.com and click on events, and you can check out all of the details there and be able to pick up a few tickets if you're interested in going. But if you have any questions about that, shoot me an email, and I'd love to be able to help you answer them. With that said, I think that we'll get into this podcast here with Thomas, and I really think that this is, like I said, a powerful conversation, and I really appreciate everybody listening and all of the support. And as always, if you do like the show and you do find it's helpful, really appreciate you sharing it with your friends, your family, anyone you think it would be valuable to listen to it, and leave a rating and review. I really appreciate each and every one of you. So I hope that you have a great rest of your week, and we will talk to you next week. There we go.
There it is.
That's the kickoff. Thomas Clements, welcome back to the podcast, buddy.
Well, it's good to be back.
Yeah, it's been a little over a year. You were on the show when the Seek One boys were up, and you were doing some magical camera work.
Yeah. Learning how the people hunt up here in PA.
Yeah, it's a little bit different.
It's cool though, super cool.
Yeah, no, it was fun to bring all of you guys up here to see Lee and Drew and yourself and just get to kind of experience something a little bit different. Is it quite a bit different from Georgia where you grew up?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say. Honestly, the culture, like the hunting culture, is pretty similar, if not bigger, up here. Mm-hmm. You know, but the style of hunting is a lot different. It's a lot bigger timber. We hunt a lot of pastures back home. Cow pastures are big, at least where I'm from.
Yeah.
And down south, it's a ton of, it's all pasture ground. But the big timber stuff is a lot harder to figure out. I'm learning, you know, just because there's so much more room and places for the deer to go, and you got to know terrain a lot more. So there's a lot more to it up here, I think.
Yeah, it's definitely different. But one thing that I admire, I'm sure, like with all the pastures, turkey hunting, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it definitely used to be. There's really, Georgia's hurting for turkeys all real bad now, and so you don't see that many in the cow pastures, not like they used to. But yeah. It is where you get to hunt a lot of them, but
yeah, there was some ground that I hunted when I was younger that had a cow pasture on it, and I remember killing a bird out of it. I didn't shoot him in the cow pasture. We saw him out there. It was right around noon, and and it was on Memorial Day, so it was super late. And it was like I don't know if that was the last day of our season or the day before last day, something around there. But anyways, I had, I was with my dad and I think I was home from college or something and saw which way the turkey was heading. So we went to the timber and ran down to the other side and set up and just a little bit of calling, and
he came in and real nice and close. But that's what I remember from hunting some pasture ground. But sounds like there's quite a bit of it.
Yeah, there is. I mean, there's definitely like a lot of the public land. The majority of it's timber. So the one bird I have killed on public land was in timber for the most part, and then they have little cutout food plots from the management will do and stuff like that, and that's where he was. But no, I'd say it's a big, well, if you go up north, like the northern part of the state's all timber, mm-hmm. with small cattle farms and dairies mixed in, but there's a bunch of turkeys up in them hills, and the deer hunting's probably more similar to this,
yeah,
up there, which I haven't done any of that. So,
well, yeah, I've heard that with both Alabama and Georgia, mm-hmm. that especially some of the northern parts of the states are very similar to what it looks like here in Pennsylvania and other parts of kind of the Appalachian Mountains.
Mm-hmm.
Do you say Appalachian or Appalachian?
Appalachian.
Oh, you do?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. We're on the same team.
Yeah, I don't say Appalachian.
Yeah. Appalachian. Yeah.
Appalachian. Yeah.
Yeah. No. Timber Ninja guys give me a hard time for that every time. They're like, really? You're saying it wrong. It's like, it's Appalachian. I'm like, no, it's Appalachian.
That's Appalachian.
Sound it out.
Yeah. You know? That's what it looks like to me.
But anyway, so Thomas, you've been hanging out with me here for the last 3 days now, I guess.
Yeah.
So Thomas is, how would you describe what you're, I guess, job title or businesses? How would you describe it? Because you do a lot of things in the production realm.
Yeah, I mean, freelance creative at this point. I mean, I have my own production company, but you know, from the film producing, whether it's TV shows or YouTube shows or the commercial work too, and then the photo side of it. So it's just kind of a hodgepodge of it all.
Yeah, and also now getting into voice stuff too.
As mm-hmm.
we talked about it a year ago when I originally started planning it, but now we're going to make it happen where there'll be a new intro to the podcast,
mm-hmm.
and it's going to be Thomas's voice because you have the voice of an angel, man. I didn't know how to say that in a straight way. But
I enjoy it. Like, it's, I don't know, it's cool. Like, I grew up around a ton of farmers because that's what my dad was in, and listening to the way they talked and stuff. And we watched a bunch of Westerns growing up, too. And so, like, John Wayne was my favorite, and, you know, Bonanza, and you listen to all
of them. Oh, Bonanza.
Yeah, Bonanza was a good one.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It was just something, it was just cool, and I wanted to be like them. So, doing the voice stuff is, you get to add a little more stuff to videos. Sometimes it's a little corny. Sometimes it's cool and it fits, and you just figure it out. But
yeah, no, I think that's really cool. And man, I should have had you do the intro to this one. I messed it up.
I don't know if I could do it on the spot though. I got to be.
You did it. You did it on the one with Lee and Drew and those guys. But no, I think that's a really cool aspect of it. So Thomas has been out here doing some work for CVA, mm-hmm. and doing some product stuff, some videos, some different things along those lines. So there'll be some new stuff coming out from them that I got to test this year and be able to utilize. So I'm not sure. I think it'll be out by the time this comes out, but I don't want to say it in case. But you can go over to CVA's website and check that out, and I'm sure I'll – with the podcast ad, I'll update that for whenever that new stuff drops. But anyways, it's been pretty cool to see how you work and kind of your flow and the creative aspect of making making high production, you know, whether it's commercials or just, you know, doing some tip, you know, following me around scouting, doing some videos along that line, and how to, everyone that I've worked with has like a different way of how they think about it and how their eye sees things, and it's pretty neat to see.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't had, like, I've shot around several people, but I'd have to agree, like, everybody's got a different way. Like, when I first started doing it, you kind of think there's one way to do things and it's the right way, and so you try to study everybody and learn on YouTube and stuff like that, and you kind of figure out that the guys who are really good at it and have the best eye, that just, it's really just a hodgepodge of things. Like, they just kind of wing it most of the time,
yeah.
and let their eye tell them what to do. And they're not like, I don't know. It's the same way with any kind of business. There's not one way to do it.
There's not an exact rule.
Yeah, there's a million ways to do the skin a cat. So it's kind of that same way, and you just kind of figure out what works and what you like, and you get an eye for it sometimes, and sometimes it works out. Sometimes you got to kind of correct things. But
yeah, I think – so I thought about this the other day about as far as like from – you can learn skills on a camera – and you can learn like how to operate the camera differently, adjust lighting and do that. But like as far as that creative eye for whether it's taking photos or videos and or having an idea how a clip is going to pull together, I think it's half just a person and their ability and their trained, you know, as far as just kind of what they were born with. And then part of it, I think you can, you know, whether it's inspiration from other people or learning to be able to kind of grow that creative mind of it. So I think it's kind of a combination because I do believe you can learn just about anything. But there's also, you know, if you look at athletes, there's naturally athletic people that have a little bit of a head start with it. And I feel like you have that creative eye already. So that helped with the way that you do your business and roll things out.
No, I appreciate that. It means a lot when people enjoy your work, and I think it's important. Like if you want to make art, whether it's painting or whether it's video, whether it's music, whatever, I think it's important to make it for you first because it needs to be like you need to be proud of it, regardless if anyone likes it or not. But obviously, it reinforces that you've got something good when people do appreciate it, and they do like it. And it, you know, when you're doing it for a business, then you have to be aware, like it has to do well for people for it to be valuable to brands, to shows. Excuse me. But that beer's got some fizz in it. But no, it's, I do think there's some natural to it, but anybody can learn how to run a camera, and it doesn't, like, I think there's a big stigma about, like, oh, I'm not good with electronics, or I'm not good with buttons. Well, I'm not either, and I'm not a tech-savvy guy. I don't get in the weeds. I just learn what I need to know to get it done.
Yeah.
And as far as filming, hunting, and stuff like that, like, if you just take the short amount of time and actually study it, like, YouTube will teach you anything you need to know and make it pretty easy to film stuff. But you know, if you want to stick with it, you got to love the art side of it, and be looking for that. So
and exactly what you said, though, like there are so many resources out there now. I mean, even like there is with hunting, with being able to fix your dryer, like you know, anything that you want to learn is available really on the internet, but you have to apply yourself to be able to do it and gain those repetitions to be able to do that. And we were talking about it. While Thomas is here, he came in. So he's coming from Georgia. You were on a different shoot in Missouri, but you came from there and we got a big snowstorm. So you got delayed a little bit, and then it's been extremely, extremely cold. And we were talking about, you know, you still had your cameras clipped onto the outside of your pack. You have those Peak Design clips. If no one has seen those, they're pretty cool, or they clip right onto your pack. They keep them secure. One little button, you can pop them out. But keeping your camera on you in a way that you can grab it and shoot something quickly is, you know, we were talking about it as far as if your camera's in your pack, it's not doing you any good.
No. And then, like, you almost got to force yourself. Like, if you want to, it's like learning any skill. If you want to learn it, you got to force yourself to do it because it's a repetition, like you said.
Yeah.
Whether it's hunting, whether it's scouting, whether it's working on a truck, you got to just do it over and over again. And then it becomes muscle memory. It becomes habit. And that's why, like, you just have to, every time you go out, you got to take the camera with you, or you got to keep shooting something. If you have an idea, even if you're not getting paid for it, you got to shoot it. You got to edit it. And I think that's where a lot of people get lost, is the editing part of it, because it's hard.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to sit at a computer and try to figure things out, and the softwares don't exactly teach you how to do it, and you got to flip back and forth between YouTube and forums and getting on the phone with people and trying to figure out, you know, why this doesn't work or whatever. But the editing side is what makes it where you can think out a storyline. Because the more you edit, the more you understand how things have to go to tell the story the way it needs to be told. So then when you go into a shoot and you say, okay, we want to do a shoot about a pair of binos that helps you scout, or that are being released, and we want to do a video on scouting, you know. Well, then you start running through the ideas of like, okay, well, you know, how are we going to use these tight shots, and then what is in the sequence, and then how is the music going to play in the background, and what kind of dialogue do we want to have to go with it? And it all just kind of crashes together in your head, but somehow it makes sense when you start thinking it out, and you just take it one shot at a time. And a lot of times, if you just get like four or five shots lined up, you get in the middle of those, and then you'll get another one coming in an idea. And it just kind of feeds off each other, and I don't know, it just, that's what we were doing the last 3 days, and I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, it was fun bouncing ideas back and forth and kind of working through that stuff, and that was something that I feel like I've been doing it for a while now, but not as much from the commercial side as far as like, you know, CVAs using this stuff for some of their advertising. A lot of the stuff I was doing before was, you know, either for my own stuff or to help a company that would be a sponsor or anything of the show, but it wasn't for them to use commercially. Mm-hmm. And that's a different level, and adds some stress to it too, because you know, your whatever your work is representing this brand and how they're doing it, and making sure that is that story of whatever that, whether it's a, I don't know if the word commercial is right, but like that video or that piece of content is telling the story that you want it to tell in an authentic way, and that as you as a viewer or a listener is understanding what is trying to be told there without sometimes being said, just through that picture.
Yeah. And that's what's cool about this one. Well, the best thing was like, you've been in it and you have a creative eye and ear yourself, and like you're immersed in all of this and you're ate up with hunting. So when you're shooting with somebody who not only is ate up with it and loves to consume information and knowledge about all of it, then it kind of like, okay, from a creative standpoint, we'll have an idea, and then I would ask you like, okay, how would you naturally do this? How would this play out in your mind and what you do? And then we can kind of bounce ideas off each other and then find something that's realistic but also super cool to watch, and it would play out really well and evoke the emotion that you want and help build the brand. And that was really cool with the project, the CVA was, you know, they were like, we have this brand plan and this is what we're trying to build, and we want people to relate to us, and we want people to build trust in what we have and who we are. And it's kind of, they trusted you because you have a similar brand and you align in the values and all that. And it was kind of like, okay, well, let's just mash the two together and create something that puts people in the same emotional state of like getting ready for hunt season and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, it was kind of cool just to see where it went with not a ton of planning.
Yeah. And on that point, like when if someone's on the outside, whether you're listening or you're watching this, you think like, okay, these shows, and whether it's a YouTube show or a podcast or whatever, it's like, oh, they're just going to, you know, they just take sponsors on whoever's going to pay. But when the way that I feel like both you and I work, and it sounds like with even like when you're taking client work and you want to work with a specific company, the way that they align with you as a person or as your business is super important to me. Like, and CVA was one of those companies that from talking to them right away, it was like, this fits. And like when I was talking with them on the phone about like how much deer camp means to me and that aspect of it, and seeing them like light up and be like, that's exactly what, you know, we're looking for. And that's what, you know, well, we agree with the same things. And it was like, man, that's something that lines up. Now, obviously the product's got to be good too, to be able to line up, but the brand and who they are is just as important, if not more at times.
Yeah, no, I'd have to agree 100%. And that's what makes it a good partnership.
Yeah. Yeah, most definitely. But it's been cool to see that. And when you were saying about like how we were brainstorming back and forth, I don't know if you knew this, Thomas, but in a past life, or I guess when I was younger, I should just say,
yeah,
that I was super into drawing.
Really?
So there's some pictures at camp. I don't know if you saw them drawn on the walls.
I saw the buck.
The Ron Pola buck. Yeah. The most controversial buck
the one
ever.
That's like this wide.
Yeah. And so like when I used to draw pictures out of magazines, my grandpa would have North American Whitetail. My grandpa could draw, and that's how I learned from him. And I'd go over there and draw, which ended up turning into wood carving. He carved a bunch of gun cabinets and clocks and mirrors and all this stuff. And I got into doing that in college, and that was how I'd make some extra money, is I'd build gun cabinets and carve all of the front doors and build elk scenes and like deer and all this different stuff. And then I would sell it for cash and make money by doing that. And I haven't done it in years because honestly, it was one of those things that I loved doing. But when I realized when I was doing it for work, I didn't love it.
So
I just kind of stopped doing it. I still draw every once in a while. And like the deer camp logo that's on my hat, I drew that. And then Jordan Riley turned it into what it is as a logo. Yeah. But like I drew the initial concept up of like what our deer camp's like when someone pulls in with a buck in the back of the truck, the tailgate down, the camp sitting there in the front porch. And like that's how that's too cool.
I didn't know that at all.
Mm-hmm. So like I've always had like a little bit of that creative side. And back when I used to do when I used to be big into riding BMX and stuff, I had a camera and I'd film it all and I'd make DVDs of me and my buddies and stuff. And so I got into it at an early age as far as like really loving that side of things, and that, you know, kind of progressed from the hunting side. And the hunting side was just that, you know, I've done it my whole life, and the doing the scouting videos and all that stuff. Really, it was more of me learning how to talk with a camera and how to explain things in a way that people could understand of what I was trying to say or do. But the actual doing of the thing wasn't hard for me because it's just what I do all the time. You know, so it just made sense. Have you ever wanted to have Levi Morgan, Andy May, Johnny Stewart, and others available at all times? Well, you can with Cyber Scout from Spartan Forge. Cyber Scout is like the ChatGPT for outdoors men and women. You can ask it any questions related to bow building, scouting, hunting, survival, and a whole lot more. I think you'll be impressed with how it responds. Cyber Scout is currently out now for a select group of early beta testers and will be available to the rest of you really soon. The entire app is a complete tool for planning your hunt with incredible aerial imagery mapping, journaling, deer prediction, and some of the most accurate and detailed weather data. Use the code EASTMEETSWEST to save 20%. And if you're still on the fence, give the 14-day free trial a chance at SpartanForge.ai. CVA has been America's number one selling muzzleloader brand for over a decade. Hunting with a muzzleloader opens up a ton of hunting opportunities across the U.S., and I've been using the Acura series. But they don't only make badass muzzleloaders. Their line of centerfire rifles are great quality and not terrible on the wallet. The Cascade short barrel is ideal for tight quarters, deer drives, and quick shots in the big woods. You can check out their line of muzzleloaders, rifles, and accessories for every season and every range at bpioutdoors.com/CVA. If you use the code EASTMEETSWEST10, you'll get 10% off of all CVA products, which includes rifles, muzzleloaders, and accessories.
No, that totally makes sense. And it makes a little more sense now to me because, you know, sometimes you'll shoot with people and they ain't got an Archie bone in them.
Yeah.
And then there's nothing wrong with that. It just doesn't, those wheels aren't, those wires aren't connected, but it did for you. And like when I would say, this is what I kind of see the shot list doing, and you kind of add on to it, or you'd have a shot idea of your own, and it, 9 times out of 10, it lined up, and I was like, yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
And so that's what made it a lot of fun shooting wise. And you got to give your own 2 cents, and we just kind of did it together, which was a lot of fun for me.
Yeah. No, like I said, it's a lot of work doing this kind of stuff. Like the filming part of it is not, I mean, that's a big part of it, but the planning aspect is underrated from
it is
the standpoint, how many we spent hours in the kitchen.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say it was, I don't know, 40, 60.
Yeah.
Planning, you know, just trying to figure out how the concept should look. Like, you know, what are people going to relate to? You know, is this going to be corny or is this going to have the right vibe? Is this something that's natural too? Like, is this in your wheelhouse? Is this things that actually happen and that we do? And does it make sense for the project? It takes a lot of time, and you were very much right about it, and have more experience in it, even planning podcasts and planning the articles that you used to write and stuff like that. Like, it's just, that's a lot of the work that never gets seen.
Yeah.
And even me, you know, in my short time doing this, the last 3 years, it's been a huge learning curve just seeing all that behind the scenes work too.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's where it comes down to what you said earlier. You got to love it and want to do it, mm-hmm. because it is a lot of work, and it seems as if it's like, you know, I feel like every kid growing up that loves to hunt is like, I want to film hunts for a living.
Yeah.
There's a lot more to it than just that.
It's like, you know, or even not even filming, but just, you know, even doing what you do, like you have to go out all the time,
mm-hmm.
and it's, gets monotonous, and like you really gotta love it.
Yeah.
And you gotta love telling people about it. You know, that's a whole nother ball game. Not just doing it, you gotta tell people about it. You gotta capture it. Self filming is horribly hard and frustrating.
I hate it.
Yeah. No, it'll ruin some hunts.
Yeah.
And I don't know, man. And some people are like, how do you film and you don't ever get to shoot? You know, and I'm like, that doesn't bother me. Like, I just like being there.
Yeah.
And like you get to be a part of it. You're watching their back. You know, a lot of times you're on the back of the tree or you're behind there over their shoulder, and I'm watching through the monitor, but I'm also like, if there's a doe they don't see, you know, if there's a cow elk coming around the corner they don't see and stuff like that, like you're there too. And that's what gets me going. Yeah. You know?
So Thomas, if you had to, like, if someone, you know, and I know there's a lot of people that are, but if you had to speak to somebody that was interested in like what you do and what and how you do it, like what is something that you see that people either look at it the wrong way or have the wrong perspective, and what piece of advice could you give to them that to help them want to do that?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things. I mean, I think there's a pie in the sky, or it's all roses and sunshine outlook on it sometimes, of like, oh, you get to travel for a living and, you know, people pay you to come hunting with them and all you got to do is carry a camera. And that's like, there's a lot more to it than that. And you spend a ton of time, countless hours on the computer editing, and that is monotonous and boring, and people, you know, I had a horrible time in high school sitting still. Still in college, it was, I don't know how I ended up in a career that I sit at a computer for a substantial amount of time. But I like it. I like the building part of editing. But I think there's also, to say there's a pie in the sky and that it's kind of over glorified by some people. But for those that want to get into it, there's also, it's not a huge barrier to entry if you're willing to put in the work. Like, there's literally everything that I've learned has either come from YouTube or from other people. Like, I didn't go to school for it. You know, I didn't really know I wanted to do it till I got out of college. And, you know, you can learn, you can fast track the learning if you're willing to pay or have the money to pay for classes. But if not, literally everything that you could ever want to learn is on YouTube. And if you want to fast track it, you learn the basics on YouTube. And then you find a mentor, somebody who's above where you want to be and or near above where you are currently, and then just work for them and figure it out.
Yeah.
And that's what fast tracked a lot of my stuff, was just working around people that were way ahead of me for less money, but enough to pay my bills and you know, free at times, doing work for free. But there's plenty of work to be done, and there's actually a big shortage of people who can edit and shoot. So if you want to stand out and you want a spot at the table, you know, figure out how to edit You make yourself very valuable.
Yeah, that's the less sexy part of doing it. But one thing I've noticed, like with you, is I saw it when you were up here in PA with Seek One and doing that. And I saw it when we were down in Alabama, when we were doing the long range hunting course down there. And then I saw it here, you know, last night. I'm like, hey, Thomas, I'm going to go to bed. You're still on your computer going through, making sure you had the assets, the photos that you thought you had, you know, making sure that everything was done right in case something had to be redone and all these different things. Like there's that part of it that's not normally seen. And I don't think you're trying to, and I'm not trying to say like it's terrible, because it's not. Obviously we love, you know, doing the things that we do, but it needs to be, it can't be just over like, glamorous or however you want to, you know, making it look like it's this, you know, just beautiful thing all the time, because it's, you know, it does, when it comes down to it, is a job, and there are things that need to be done and need to be done in a certain way.
Yeah. And I think you need to go into it with a realistic outlook of like, it is work and you want to love what you're doing, but you also need to take it very seriously, because it's like there's shots, you know, you can't mess it up. And you can't bump deer. And that's one thing people don't understand, too, is like, you might be being paid to be there, but you best not ruin that hunt.
Yeah.
You know, just be a fly on the wall. Be there, but don't be there type deal. And you got to be a real good people person, too, because you're gonna run into all different kinds of people all over the country and or world even. And you got to learn how to get along with all different kinds of people. Because one thing I learned early on, one of my good buddies told me, is like, you don't have to be the best shooter in the world, but if you're fun to be around and you're good and you clean up after yourself and you carry your own weight and then some, you'll get called back.
Yeah.
There's people like, they'll get by with a mediocre camera guy and even editor if you're hardworking and just good to be around.
Because
it's like, creative people, we can be weird. You know, just plain and simple. And so having those people skills too, and you got, so that's part of your upbringing, you know, your family and your mom and dad teach you how to have manners and stuff like that. But it's you got to really love it and enjoy it. And it's fun. What makes it the most fun for me is just the people that I get to meet. It's like coming out and hanging out with you. Like, we did work really hard on this shoot, but we also just hung out, you know, and got to do some fun things when we weren't shooting. And we jive because we have the same values and the same interests and stuff like that. And that's what those relationships and that you get to build and stuff like that, that does it for me.
Yeah, you got to spend a couple hours over there with my dad last night.
That was cool.
And yeah, he was smiling ear to ear, telling stories and showing you sheds and going through. And
that dude's something else. He's a mountain man for sure.
Yeah, it's super cool. And to, like you said, like before I got into this, I wouldn't, you know, who would have thought that I'd be, you know, hanging out, having a couple beers and talking with, you know, a guy from Georgia, you know, it's just like being in a small town and growing up. It's just like, that's another world, you know, that's a whole different world, where now that world has become smaller in a way for me with these opportunities.
Yeah. And that's something super cool that, you know, just a part of being in the media world, not even necessarily whether it's cameras or editing or music or, but podcasting, it's like you literally are telling stories and getting to hear stories. Like it made my whole trip getting to sit down there with your dad for 2 hours, because you can just hear and feel the joy of every story he tells and every shed that he picked up out of the thousand of them that were down in that basement. Every single one of them that he picked up, he could tell you where, how many times he had this buck on camera, how many times he saw it on the hoof, how many times it boogered him, you know. And then, you know, it's just cool, you know. And then that's what I think we get caught up in the quickness of consumption and media, and it's bad for me. Like, I have to remove myself from stuff, because it robs me of a lot of joy, of a lot of focus. And the woods is such a place of presence. Like, you got to be there. And like, and your dad is, he don't have social media. He don't have, you know, he's removed from all that. And you hear the joy that he gets from all of those encounters. And it's like that is what it is. Yeah. If you just bottle that up and give it to everybody, everybody would leave their phone at home every time they went in the woods. You know, it's like he went hunting the last day of the season today, and he's hunting a big buck. He didn't even text us the whole time. We're sitting here waiting for updates, and he don't even care. He's there.
Yeah.
You know, that's what's cool to me.
Yeah, I had to text him an hour and a half after dark and make sure, one, he got back.
Yeah.
And two, I'm like, well.
Yeah.
Three doe. But, no, he's definitely ate up with it. And yeah, this is the first year in a long time that, that first time I can ever remember, actually, that, he didn't shoot a Pennsylvania buck. And and I know that was eating at him, but, man, he went until literally the bell rang.
It wasn't a lack of effort.
No.
No.
He went literally till the bell rang and was out there when it's, single-digit temperatures the flintlock that may or may not go off.
Or if it does go off, it might take a few seconds to go off.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. And but anyways, talking about that with the consumption aspect of it, you and I had some lengthy conversations on this, both being in the media world and seeing, we are a part of producing hunting content that people consume. Mm-hmm. But there's this thing that goes back and forth, and we both in our minds of like, how good is that to do that? And we both agree there. It's a very good thing of having media, not really, I guess, talking poorly on that aspect of it, but how you portray those things and what we are putting out and how people are consuming it and what eyeballs are on them is super important. And you gotta constantly think about that. And sometimes there's not really easy answers to it, and sometimes there's not an answer that I can come up with that you can come up with.
Yeah.
But I think it's important to have that discussion and think about those things.
Yeah. No, I mean, I agree 100%. It's glamorous from the outside looking in of like, oh, you create podcasts around hunting for a living, you make videos about hunting for a living, you take photos of hunting for a living, and it's like, yeah. That small, tiny portion of what we do for work is very cool, but it's also a huge responsibility, and some people aren't even aware that it is a responsibility, and it's not dogging on anybody, but our awareness of, especially now media is worldwide, and people who love hunting, people who hate hunting, and people who don't know anything about hunting, they all have access to our worlds now, and media is here. It's not going away. And so you can't sit on the sidelines and say, well, we just can't shoot anything about nothing, because that's just it's not realistic. People want to tell stories, and they want, and it should be, but I think you hit it on the head of like, there's not always a right or wrong answer on how to portray something or how to go about something. But when you carry yourself with knowing that it is your responsibility to be the ambassador for the resource, the animals, the land, the rights to hunt, and the way you hunt, like that, and how we portray it, that's what keeps those things alive. It keeps the resource there. It keeps the freedoms to hunt there. And it passes it on to the next generation on how to carry yourself in the woods, how to respect the animals, how to hunt ethically and morally. Like, there's ways to kill animals that isn't hunting. It's just killing. And it's, being authentic and showing things as they happen is sometimes hard to do, because there are gruesome things that happen in hunting that are bittersweet. We don't love to see it either, but it is what happens. And so, it's a hard row to hoe, so to speak,
Yeah, no, and like, it's that one of the things like that I struggle with is, okay, showing the bad parts of hunting, or mm-hmm. the less, the parts that nobody wants to have, say wounding an animal, mm-hmm. That's something that happens, And I anything that's happened, I talk about it on the podcast mm-hmm. because I do believe that there are lessons to be learned from that and yeah. that, you know, people can learn from my mistakes. They can understand it. I'm a human. You know, everyone makes mistakes. That kind of stuff happens. But you got to watch by, you know, being honest about that and sharing it in a world like social media, like Instagram, that doesn't, you know, this podcast, I'd say probably 99.9% of the people that are listening are hunters.
Yeah.
So that, you know, they get it already. They're yeah. already kind of on our side from that perspective. But when you look at a social media realm, you don't know who's going to get eyeballs on it, especially if yeah. a public profile and anybody can find that video and somehow it hits that explore page on Instagram and yeah. anyone can see it. And if that story's not told right in that, or sometimes you might even have it written out in a caption, but that photo tells a different,
yeah.
gives that, you know, whatever it creates a reaction in somebody in a matter of seconds that they're already fuming. They're not yeah. looking at the rest of what's there. And the thing is, like, you can't, and this isn't like saying, you know, shouldn't apologize at all for being a hunter. It's being aware of what you're doing. And this is definitely magnified on people like us, someone like me that's, you know, in front of the camera yep. on, you know, being out there in front of a lot more eyeballs than, say, the normal person that hunts. But even the normal person that hunts, the regular, you know, Joe that has nothing to do with the hunting industry per se, needs to be aware of that.
Yep.
You know, no, there's when you're posting on social media, and like, I'm a huge fan of trapping and I believe there's a huge purpose for it. And I'm a huge fan of it, but sometimes the way people show that isn't helping the situation. Like, if we want to say, like, yeah, you know, is it our God given right to be able to do these things? Yeah, it should be. But there's the way things are, you know, now that's not really the case. And as far as that stuff can be taken away, we're seeing that in states like Colorado and Washington and Oregon and New Jersey and all these places that are chipping away. And I think, you know, we're not helping ourselves, and I'm not trying to make this seem doom and gloom, but I think we have an opportunity to self-regulate ourselves and how we are sharing things and how we are doing that. And man, it's something that I constantly think about, and I've made mistakes for it before. Like there was a video that I had posted last year or 2 years ago where Kurt had shot a turkey in Montana at like 65 yards. It was a long shot, and you know, posted the video of it and, you know, people jumped on us of like, that's not ethical to do that and blah, blah, blah. And maybe, you know, and maybe it needs to be thought about, but at the same time, I did no, and in that 30 second clip did no justice to explain that my brother is a gunsmith. He shoots guns constantly. He knows where his gun shot, you know, like the turkey died instantly. There was no problems with that. You know, it can happen at a closer distance, but nonetheless the messaging wasn't the greatest on how that was put out and portrayed, and that was something I overlooked. And so you know, I'm by saying this is not saying I don't make those mistakes, but it's to think about that before you do these things, and the less amount of mistakes that we can make in that is going to help us. The Mobile Hunters Expo is a consumer-based hunting show unlike any other. It provides an interactive learning experience where you can try all things mobile hunting and learn from the best in the business. Come experience an unbiased, community-based environment where you can improve your hunting skills and find the right equipment for your needs. I'll be speaking at the Nor'easter Show in Mannheim, Pennsylvania at Spooky Nook Sports from August 9th to 11th, 2024. So come check it out or either of the other shows in Michigan and Georgia. You can purchase tickets online at themobilehuntersexpo.com or grab tickets at the door. I'll see you there.
No, 100%. I think the best way that you put it, the best way of just saying that, it just comes down to self-regulation. And it's not doom and gloom. Like, we're all human and we're going to make mistakes. But operating with the awareness of, like, these things are not permanent. Our rights, I don't trust the government at all. I don't. Yeah. I think you can pretty much just exclude them protecting your rights to hunt a deer. So, you know, this is up to us. And so there's videos that only belong. There's videos, there's pictures that only belong at hunting camp, you know, because the people that are in that room understand what happened there. And, you know, it's all the adrenaline, it's all the whatever. But the rest of the world doesn't necessarily need to see that. And it's not you being less of a man because you're not willing to post it on Instagram. It's you being more of a man or a woman because you're willing to say, no, I'm going to have more couth than that. And I'm going to refrain from posting these things on the internet because I know that it probably won't, but it could do damage to our image as hunters, you know. And that's the whole world thinks that people just love to kill animals, but in reality, for the majority of them, and there's exceptions, but for the majority of hunters, nobody loves animals more than we do. And like you guys self-regulate up here for years when the doe populations were low, like you guys would only shoot one doe in an area a year.
Mm-hmm.
Because not because you didn't have the opportunity to shoot more, but because you knew that, hey, this is on us. We're not being told by the state, this is us. And it's no different when it comes to social media and even sending stuff to your friends. You know, you and I grew up in a world where our grandpas and our dads taught us how to hunt, you know, and when I was growing up, like, you weren't allowed to kill an animal unless you were going to eat it, kind of thing. And it was just those simple things that just taught you, like, life and death is, it's normal. That's life. And it's supposed to be that way. And we have stewardship over these animals. But it's a huge responsibility. Like, we get so passionate about chasing these animals, and we love them so much. But it's also a huge responsibility to take care of them, too. And if we want the rights to hunt them, and if we want the ability to take care of them the way they should be, because we've seen in states like Oregon and California, when you take away that hunting, you watch in the next few years, the animals are going to suffer. Because they're not being looked after, and the money's not there to manage them, and there's going to be unnecessary disease and stuff like that. And it just snowballs. And it just, like you said, there's no right or wrong, yes or no answer all the time. Sometimes it just takes some perspective of just thinking through things before we, and how we present things, because the whole world is open to what we do now.
Yeah. And yeah, and that was, I mean, for me, one of the biggest eye openers coming from a small town where everybody hunted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that it was normal that, you know, if I killed a buck, I'd be going in with my pictures. Mm-hmm. I'd have them printed out, and I'd be taking them in my backpack, probably carrying them in my hand, you know, showing people and showing my teachers. Like, everybody was on the same page, but I was in that echo chamber. I didn't know what else is out there. And you can think, like, oh, well, the other people don't matter, but they do. The problem is, we are the minority in the world at this point, and I think that, you know, we have to be very cognizant of that and what we are doing and what we are sharing. And again, that's not apologizing for what we do. It's just trying to be cognizant of it. You're never going to change the mind of an anti-hunter. That's not what the goal is here. Mm-hmm. But there is just a ridiculous amount of people that fall in that middle that can be swayed in our direction when we need that vote. Or want, you know, to be able to sway things one way or another. Those are the people that we really want to, you know,
cater to
and have them understand it and be able to see. And it's not that we want to make all those people hunters, but we want them to be able to understand it.
Yeah.
And you know, say, oh, I understand why they do that. And I've had conversations with people. I've been in cities, I've been in bars and places like that, and they ask me, oh, what do you do for a living? Well, this is going to be a minute. You know, we're going to have to.
Yeah.
Or where are you heading? And I'm like, oh, I'm actually on my way to Montana to go on a bear hunt. Well, that takes a little bit more explanation than that. And normally you have that conversation face to face, and you can get to a pretty good place of being able to explain that versus a picture just showing up, you know, of a dead bear with blood all over the ground. And whatever, and hooting and hollering. Again, we understand what that is, but there's more to that that others don't understand from seeing that.
Yep. 100%. I mean, like, seeing a picture of an animal with an arrow sticking out of it and there's blood everywhere and everybody's high-fiving, like, we know for the most part and most times, you know, months of work went into killing that animal per se, and hours of stalking and failed attempts and whatnot, like more effort than the average person who doesn't hunt would be willing to do anything to acquire food, much less, you know, whatever. But a picture doesn't show that. And even your description on the bottom of the picture, like you said, all it takes is the picture or the video, and it evokes the emotion regardless of how you explain the situation. So it's just a lot of times just taking the time to step back and say, hey, does this respect the animal and does this respect our traditions as hunters? Like as a whole, who we are, does this portray us in a good light? That's all it takes, you know, and carrying yourselves at a higher level than maybe is necessary so that you're teaching the next generation how to respect animals and how to portray things. Cause for the most part, a lot of people just don't know any better because they don't have anybody to tell nothing, and they see videos that go viral on the internet, and it's, you know, we're shooting ourselves in the foot there.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. And you know, even from the example of, you know, talking about protecting the resource, so even going past the photos and the videos, another thing we were having conversation with, you know, over coffee and then a few beers later at night was, you know, I struggle with the aspect, I love education.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't have the opportunities to go hunt where I hunt if I didn't learn that from somebody else that was willing to put that information out there.
Yeah.
And that's, I'm very passionate about doing that. But I also go back and forth sometimes on like, what is too much where, you know, that I could potentially ruin that resource for people in the future. And there's a lot of things that are, you know, in quotation, you know, pieces of content that I would like to create because I think it would be helpful for people. But then I look and the negatives outweigh the positives and I don't do it.
Yeah.
And I don't put it out there. And that's why you'll never, like, I hate when people always ask, oh, what part of the state are you hunting? I'm not going to answer those questions.
Yeah.
It's not to be rude. It's because, one, I don't want to ruin my own experience, but even from a bigger standpoint, I don't want to blow up anybody else's spots or ruin that, you know, for somebody else and reduce the experience that somebody could have in that space. You know, for example, I was telling you some of the old scouting videos that I used to do on YouTube. I used to just pick a random place of public land and do the video to give an idea. It wasn't a place I went to or anything. It was just, that was an example.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought because it wasn't my spot that, you know, it wouldn't be a big deal. Not thinking, and you know, saying it out loud, it's like, yeah, Bo.
Yeah.
But like,
in the moment.
That is somebody else's place that I'm highlighting and showing that. And it's like, so now, you know, I try to find places that are private land that look similar to what I'm talking about. So I can still do the education part, but there's not a chance of, you know, affecting someone's land or a place that they have in their experience to be able to enjoy the resources. And that's part of, you know, me learning through it and trying to figure out where that line is. And I really don't think there's a rule book for it. It's kind of what you said of taking a step back and thinking about it. And a lot of times your gut kind of tells you what's right or wrong with that.
No, 100%. And it's something I've struggled with a lot. Like I may not be the talent or whatever that's on film, but I'm right there with it. And like my hands are helping create and tell these stories. And so I want to be able to hang my hat on what's being told, you know, and what it's encouraging throughout the hunting industry and hunters as a whole. And like you said, like we have to be patient with ourselves to a degree because we are human and we don't know. There's no rule book on what to do and not do as media becomes more and more prevalent and hunting becomes more popular. You're going to make mistakes and there's things that are going to happen. And that's what I don't like on the internet. Will just torch you and burn your house down if you make one mistake with no context to who you are as a person. And that's just the keyboard warriors, and there's not much you can do to it. But it does punch you in the gut when that happens.
Yeah.
But I think you're right of it's just carrying yourself of just stepping back and wanting to say, you know, I'm going to do what's best for the resource. And that's just when it comes to, you know, if you're going to hunt public land, even if you're hunting states, you know, if you draw attention to certain things, you have to understand there's always going to be consequences to it, you know, and it's not good or bad. That's just the way life is. And even back in the day when they wrote articles about things and it was all magazines, there was no video, there was none of that. There were people up in arms about people writing articles about it because nobody yeah. ever knew that you could hunt in this state or that state and that there were deer there or whatever. So it's been around and will always be around, but I think it's how we carry ourselves in what we're doing that protects the resource and teaches people to carry themselves in the right way. And the respect of the resource is the most important thing. And whether it's public land or private land, it's that I think would weather longer than even if, you know, you make a mistake or you don't know how to do something. That's going to fix it. And your gut, like you said, is going to teach you the right thing yeah. to do.
You know, exactly what you're saying about the resource. And you know, going back to the point of the unrealistic expectation that media is just going to go away and you can't. Mm-hmm. And I don't agree with that and some of the people that say that that's the answer because I don't think that is realistic. That's not a... Would that solve it if there was a possibility of all that, you know, going away? Maybe, but it's not a possibility.
Yeah.
Like, and also, I think there's such a positive that can come from it mm-hmm. and being able to be active. I mean, if you would have, because of social media and because of podcasts and videos and people talking about how important it is to be members of conservation organizations and people that are out there fighting for it.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm joined in all yeah. these organizations and spending money and donating 3% of all the apparel sales to a conservation organization every quarter. And that's, I'm not sitting there, you know, clapping my own hands here, but it's like, I wouldn't have been doing that if it wasn't for learning about that through media.
Yeah.
And going back as far as you can think when media started with magazines, with those things, there was always things that happened that may, you know, quote unquote, ruin an area for a time period. Yeah. Things usually come back around, like that's things go in ebbs and flows, but there's always been that. Now it is a little bit easier. You know, it doesn't, mm-hmm. you don't have to have a subscription to a magazine. You can just go on YouTube
yeah.
and search, you know, big bucks in Iowa. And yeah. it's like, okay, now I can find a whole lot of stuff there. But so I think even it's more important now to, mm-hmm. to be, I guess, think about those things and understand how you're doing it. And again, it doesn't matter where you're at on the level of exposure. I mean, it does from the standpoint of, you know, obviously someone like, you know, the Seek One guys are going to have a bigger impact mm-hmm. than, you know, Joe Schmo. But at the same time, everybody should be thinking about it.
Yeah, 100%. And I think you're very right on the fact that it doesn't matter if you got 10 followers or 20,000 followers. Like the algorithm doesn't care how many followers you got, mm-hmm. you know, and it doesn't matter per se if one person sees your post. Like, you got to think about it on the aspect of you are trying to teach people how to respect animals the way they should be respected. And if one person sees your display, whether it's post, video, or podcast, or whatever, of your love for hunting and the way that you respect it and that kind of stuff, it's going to encourage the right behavior. Versus where if they see the wrong thing, you know, and they don't know any better, that's one more person who's potentially hurting hunting as a whole because we just, you know, because they don't know any better, not with malicious intent or anything like that. And then the other thing, like people don't understand, like the Seek One guys, like it's cool. You know, a lot of people think that it's super cool to have that kind of notoriety for killing big deer. But what they don't know is like that is an enormous responsibility that yep. they carry every day. with everything that they do and everywhere that they go, that people are watching them like a hawk. And they got to carry themselves a notch higher because of that.
Yeah.
And they got to do everything to a T because of that. And not everybody's cut out for that.
No. And I mean, I've had, you know, I've had conversations with both Drew and Lee, but especially Lee, who is someone that does not take that lightly. And yeah. Like, for anybody that doesn't know Lee and just sees him on camera, like, Lee really, he knows what he's doing has an impact that could be positive or negative depending on how that's portrayed. Mm. And I really respect him for how much he thinks about it, to the point where it's detrimental to yeah. mental health sometimes.
Oh yeah.
And but it's not an easy thing for to be able to do that. And you know, and Lee's, you know, talked to me about some of those hard things and thinking about it, and again, I respect the hell out of him because I think he has really good intentions on what he's doing and how he's trying to portray those things. But it's not something that's very simple. Like, honestly, if I think in the media realm, and man, I hope Lee doesn't listen to this because I don't like to say anything positive about him to his face. But the fact that, you know, if there was more Lee's out there, we'd be in a better spot yeah. from a media standpoint. Man, that hurt to say.
Oh yeah, I know. He won't listen to it though.
No, he won't. He will not.
No, I agree, man. It's as a whole, it's hard, you know. And even him, he had a learning curve because he didn't grow up in a hunting background. So it's, I don't know. It's, and like we say all this, not to be doom and gloom, because you can't go through life like it's inevitable. Like you said, it's not going away. This is the world we live in. Things progress. We talked about that earlier. You can't stop progression.
No.
And it's better to just have the right attitude about it. Like, okay, I'm going to do what I can. And I'm going to rest my hat on the fact that I'm going to do what I can. I'm going to make mistakes. That's okay. But I'm going to do what I can to protect the resource and to protect our freedoms by behaving accordingly and trying to portray things in the right light. And that's, if everyone can conduct themselves that way and we can encourage each other to do the same, I think we'd be in a real good spot.
Yeah. And yeah, again, it comes down to what you said with the way you portray yourself, whether it's social media, whether it's self-regulating with tags. You know, we're talking about turkey tags and looking at, you know, deer, whatever. And you can't just sit there and blame the state on saying, oh, they're not doing this. Well, you look at their management areas. They're relatively big. And are there times that they could do a better job? Of course. Everybody, you know, can do a better job at things. But at the same time, you can't have the aspect, you know, I've seen this before and I've talked about it before. But, you know, locally, it's be like, oh, why are they giving out, you know, 4 deer tags? There's not any out there. But some of those same people are the ones filling all 4 tags because they'll say, well, the next person's going to shoot them, so I might as well. That's such a terrible attitude. Mm-hmm. You can't do that. And I'm very thankful that, you know, my dad taught me that growing up as far as like, you know, there's areas we just didn't shoot does because there wasn't enough that, you know, my dad felt like we should take any out of the population. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we were talking about that. Him and I were talking about it. There's some areas that are getting better with population than they were before. And we're like, yeah, I'd feel comfortable shooting does in that area, you know, again. And there's enough of a resource that we don't feel like the impact that we're going to have would be negative on that. But it takes looking at that from yourself and self-regulating, you know, not just in media. You don't have to have any social media to be a helpful part in the future of these resources.
Absolutely. And I've come to learn from getting to know people across the country that we get real frustrated with a lot of state agencies on how things are done from the outside looking in, but a lot of these state agencies are severely underfunded and they're understaffed for how many acres, like you said, they have to cover and they have to survey for all of these things. And the best thing you can do instead of griping about it to your buddy or whatever is, you know, donate more to the funding for the organizations that can do the wildlife studies that they need to do. Or you can actually contact, you know, state agencies and stuff like that and give your input in a constructive way of trying to, don't call them up and beat them over the head with
them. And tell them they're a bunch of assholes.
Yeah, like no, that we ain't trying to do that. That won't get nobody anywhere. But I was just trying to be constructive because it's easy, and I'm guilty of it too. You see things on the internet. You see things in the woods. You know, there used to be a lot of turkeys around here, and there ain't no turkeys now. And, boy, I wish they'd drop the limit down. And it's, self-regulate.
Yeah.
Try to encourage, call your state agencies. Try to be constructive about it. Like these things, turkeys were extinct 30 years ago, give or take. I could be wrong on that number. Some time ago.
Not extinct.
Yeah, well, they weren't extinct. They were severely close to being that way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But they were brought back because people wanted to bring them back and did something about it, you know. So it's, there's going to be bell curves. There's going to be ups and downs.
And, yeah, we have the power to to be able to affect that. And that's a positive thing. You know, we do have that ability to be able to do so. And that's, and you think about it from that perspective, you know, that there weren't really any turkeys.
Yeah.
It's really not that long ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, but again, at the same time, look at the buffalo that we had a negative impact on. So we should learn from that.
Yeah, let's not do that.
Yeah, and there's definitely lots of positives that can be pulled from what we're saying here. It's not a doom and gloom thing. It's just something that, you know, I think you and I both really feel passionate about and have thought a lot about and continue to think a lot about. That I realize that sometimes, like even doing this podcast, a lot of times we talk about deer hunting tactics and doing this stuff.
Yep.
That's sexy, and that's what we like to talk about.
Yep.
We all like to talk about it, but at the same time, we have the duties to talk about these things too, and in a way that, because they are important to us, they're just not as sexy to talk about.
Yeah, it's the behind-the-scenes stuff that nobody wants to talk about or face. It's the awkward conversations with yourself and with other people. You know, it's not easy to self-regulate. When you only get so much time off from work, or when you only get so many opportunities to go out and do things, it's hard. Like, we're not downplaying any of that. And this is not us sitting here saying, you know, shame on you. Like, we struggle with this too.
Yeah.
Like, this is us, you know, gut checking ourselves on, are we, because every time that we produce something, we're sitting there going, is this, you know, what is this going to do? Like, is this doing good, or is it doing, you know, harm? And it's an everyday thing, and not good or bad. It's just the life we live. And it's exciting that we have that responsibility, because it makes you feel, you, like you said, like we have the ability to change the way things are, or to protect the way things are.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exciting.
Yeah, no, it is. And it's crazy that, you know, we have that responsibility. Mm-hmm. It's a big one.
Yeah.
To be able to do so. And like, again, one last thing I want to say back on the state agency thing. Like, I think it's super important to give your feedback and give your comments, but again, not in just a complaining, bashing way. Because think about it. If I were to come up to you and say, I didn't like something you were doing with camera work, and I were to approach it with, you're an idiot. How can't you get that right? Why is your shutter speed this? Why is your white balance this?
Yeah.
You're an idiot. Or I could say, hey, man, do you maybe think we, you know, can bump this up or give potential solutions, do something? Maybe you still might not be happy that I'd be given that feedback, but at the same time, you're going to be more receptive to hearing that versus just because you're going to have that fight or flight response of either going to shut down and not want to talk to me, or you're going to, you know, throw something back
and blow it off. Yeah.
And then once emotions get involved, nothing really gets done.
Yeah.
You know, you can't think of things clearly.
100%. No, I totally agree. It's those management positions. Like, I'm guilty of it. I definitely have taken them for granted. Like, a lot of those guys, like they live that life, and it's not necessarily the highest paying job in the world or the most rewarding from a popularity standpoint.
Yeah.
But they're in there day in and day out, and they see it because they love it and they care about it. And you know, we love to go hunt them and stuff like that. And we love it just as much as they do. But like you said, we have to be constructive about it. We can't just let our emotions get the best of us and just start, you know, griping and whining. we got to approach things and try to actually find legitimate, applicable, and realistic solutions to stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes you may not know that, and that's fine to be, you know, just
yeah.
be aware of your approach and how you're delivering the
mm-hmm.
the information that you're trying to deliver, I guess.
Yeah. Don't go screaming at people on the phone.
Yeah, that don't help anybody.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
No, it's yeah, but I think again it's exciting from the standpoint that we do have that ability to change things and be able to have an impact in that way. And again, I think, you know, not just saying this because I'm in the media realm or you're in the media realm, but there's things that we can do. Like you were talking to me about, like things you're passionate about are telling stories and telling really cool stories. And we were brainstorming ideas for doing films and things that would be, that would, you know, someone were to watch that and they feel positive in some way, have a certain emotion, whether they want to go do something that's similar, that would help things, or just that they get fulfillment and entertainment out of watching that in a positive way. And from our standpoint, what we do, that's a really cool way of being able to have that impact and do that.
It's super fulfilling, and that's what makes those projects fun and worth all the really hard behind the scene BS that nobody sees, and trying to figure out things that don't work and do work and break down and all of it.
Yeah. Was there anything else you think you want to add to that point there?
No, I mean, on the consumption side, I mean, we talked about earlier too, not necessarily from a what we put out there standpoint, but from what we take in. We talked about that some.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I don't have any evidence of it per se or scientific data to back it up, but I think there's some truth to the amount of stuff that we consume, whether from hunting, on the hunting content side, but I think it spills over into other areas of life as well. But we consume so much information and stimulus about what we love so much, which is hunting and the pursuit of game, or whether it's managing game or whatever, that I think over time we're training ourselves to be, you know, conditioned to love that immediate success or that immediate reward. And it's a bit numbing to our actual experiences in the woods and out in the field of the fact that, you know, and especially if you talk to your dad, like how many days does he spend actually out there, and how many days does he actually see that deer?
Yeah,
you know,
a lot to a little.
Yeah, very. But he's still fired up to go out there and do it over and over and over again. And I think that, you know, the way that the algorithms are written now with TikTok and Instagram and the immediate, just we just see things. We see kill shots. We see successful pictures. We see all these kinds of things immediately without context to the blood, sweat, and tears that went into getting there. That it's not a conscious thing, but I think it's a subconscious conditioning that we ought to be aware of and probably regulate a little bit on how we consume things.
Yeah, I mean, so an example too is like, the how it can, you know, negatively impact you. If you're having a rough season and you're not seeing many bucks or you're not seeing any turkeys or whatever, and you get done hunting for the day, or maybe you are hunting and you're on your phone and you look and you start seeing like so-and-so shot a huge buck, so-and-so, and yes, you're happy for them, but there's always that part in your mind. It's like, man, do I suck? Like, no, it's like, you don't, first of all, you don't know. Maybe that person, this is the first buck they got in 3 or 4 years, or this is, you don't know that story or how much work that they put into that. And it's hard, you know, even myself that is, you know, I think about it, I'm in it, but at the same time, I still see it, you know, tough years like I had this year. Now I'm very thankful that I shot a nice buck in West Virginia in a doe, but in Pennsylvania, which is like where my heart is all in there. Like, I put a lot of effort into it, and to not shoot a buck here this year, first time in a long time, it was really, really hard. And like, and it makes you question a lot of things, and you're like, man. But if you sit back and you think about it, and you look at the experiences, like, I'm like, man, I had the best year ever. That literally one little moment could have changed my whole perspective.
Yeah.
And you got to have that in, you have to have that in mind when you're scrolling and you're seeing all these things, and especially if you're new to hunting too. Like, if you're someone that comes into it and you heard about it from, you know, Cam Haynes and Joe Rogan talking, and you're like, I want to get into hunting, or I want to, you know, provide my own meat, and you don't do good, but you see everybody else doing good, you start getting down about it. And that's not a good way to measure what it is, because if we just like that aspect, our goal is to kill the animal to be able to do that. But that can't be the only thing you love about doing it.
Yeah.
And that whole pursuit of it. And my dad is that perfect example. You know, you were in his basement. You saw the thousands of sheds, literally, and all the bucks on the wall. And if you were to put how much goes into every single one of those, and you could tell, again, how much it meant to him, because he knew, he could tell you a 20-minute story about every shed that he's found and that buck and going through it and all those different things. Like, there's so much more that goes into that, and that's where that love of that pursuit and learning to love that process of it is super important, where the consumption standpoint can deflate that a little bit.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think if you were to look at the ratios, like, you know, on effort to success, it'd be a horribly low ratio for especially public land whitetail hunting, but it doesn't make it any less rewarding. You know, in fact, it would probably heighten it, because, you know, it's that much more work that goes into something, and it makes it that much more pure and I want to say rewarding again, but I've said that like 10 times, but
yeah.
Same thing. And I think social media is an unrealistic just window
snapshot
to look at hunting through, because like we said earlier, you're not able to show the whole context to how things hunting. That's why I like long form or really powerful short form stuff, because I try to tie the emotion and the realism of how much it took to get there into the things that we make, because it's the closest thing we can get to putting you there. You know, when we consume things that are just pinnacle, 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 with none of the valleys ever in there, well, then we expect the pinnacle with no valley. And it's not a conscious thought. I mean, it's, you know, whether it's success in business, whether it's, you know, success in whatever, I think that's just how we're conditioned to process things and be used to things.
Yeah, I mean, relationships, whether that's, you know, romantic or friendships or anything, like, you're going to have those peaks and those valleys. And I'm not one to give much advice on a lot of those things, but I feel like you've got to understand that it's not always going to be riding that mountaintop, looking on that ridge out at the sunset. You know, sometimes you're going to have to dive down to get water 2,000 feet below in the mountains and figure out how to get back up.
Yep. That's what it takes. But that's what makes it worth it too.
Yeah.
I think that's the purity of hunting is in not only the respect of the game that you pursue, the feeding your family with good food, but also it's the blood, sweat, and tears that you were willing to sacrifice out of respect for the animal and in the love of the pursuit and the challenge of besting that animal.
Yeah, 100%. Well, I think, Thomas, I think we got into that pretty good. And man, I feel like there's so much more to be said on it, but I think that from the standpoint of anybody listening to this and the way that we're describing, again, not the doom and gloom side of it, it's just being aware of how you're thinking and how you're going through things. And again, it can be translated to so many different aspects in life. And I really appreciate the fact that you think about that, because it challenges me even hearing you talk about these things of the way I look at it. Mm-hmm. And I think that helps being around people like that and having these conversations.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the best thing you can do in life is find people that think the way that you want to think and hang around them, go hunting with them.
Yeah. Just go hunting with
them. Go hunting with them.
I love it, dude. So to kind of wrap this up, Thomas, if anybody does want to follow you along on the social medias and, you know, or reach out to you for any work or anything like mm-hmm. that, how would someone get a hold of you?
Just Instagram. It's my name backwards. It's just Clements_Thomas. And that's where I'm most active. Most of my portfolio, my website's linked there. And my contact information's there. You know, holla if you want to do something cool.
Awesome, man. But well,
thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, brother. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of East Meets West Hunt with your host, Bo Martonic. For more great content and to stay up to date, visit eastmeetswesthunt.com, Facebook at East Meets West Outdoors, and Instagram at East Meets West Hunt. If you enjoyed today's episode, please review and subscribe, and we'll catch you next time.